episode of Learned, the podcast, with your hosts, Dr. John Paul and Kevin Allred.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Learned. I am John.
I'm Kevin.
And we are so excited to be back on the microphone with you all. How have you been, girl?
I've been all right. I've been up and down. How have you been?
Girl, the same. I think this is the time of the year. So I always have to tell people, like, so first off, before we like jump into like that episode, you know, thank you for tuning into another episode. We are so grateful that you all come and listen to us, you know, talk about the good, the bad, the tests, the trials, and everything that circles around what it's like to just try to live in a world where the world's not really built for you. So really, truly appreciate everybody who's been sending us love and joy. It's been very interesting to have people like tap me on the shoulder and say, oh my God, this episode spoke to, you know, something I was going through, or somebody be like, oh my God, like I was listening to this one episode and it was something I just experienced. And so thank you for talking about it. So it's really, really cool to know that there are people, you know, and circles that are listening and tuning in and are really taking something from it. But yeah, for me, I think you saying up and down, this part of the year has been exceedingly difficult. And I don't know why. I feel like it's been the same for everyone in 2019. But how about you?
Yeah, no, I mean, and this is the time where it starts getting colder in New York. Mm-hmm. So that always makes me kind of, you know, what, seasonal. Mm-hmm. Those seasonal changes.
Girl, that's sad. I tell you, seasonal sad. Anxiety disorder.
Yeah, into the mm-hmm. cold. And then I don't have, like, any clothes for winter. Like, all my clothes are basically t-shirts and jeans. So, like, then I went shopping and then it made me feel bad because I had to spend money to buy, buy long sleeve shirts and sweatshirts and stay warm. And I'm like, oh, but I don't want to spend money, but now I'm freezing and the heat wasn't on in my apartment. Oh, it's on now. We can relax. So that time of the year, plus just, yeah, it's just been an up and down couple weeks.
Yeah, but
mental health wise, we're here.
Yes, girl, but we are here and we are going to get through it and we are going to give the people what they have asked for. So I know it's been a little bit of time since we last chatted. Anything that has come up or anything that you've been doing? What's been going on? How was your time in Canada?
It was fun. We did the Beyonce round table at the Toronto Public Library. It was me, Michael Arsenault, Tanisha Ford, I Can't Date Jesus, and mm-hmm. I think his second book is already out for pre-order now, so everyone go get that. I'm really excited for the second one because it's all about student loan debt. And it's called I Can't Date. No, the first one's I Don't Want to Die Poor is the second one. Right. And if you read the first one, you know, or any of Michael's writing, you know, his like personality. And he says he gets even more personal and like vulnerable in this next one, all about money issues, which I feel like I can very much relate to. So I'm excited for that.
Yes. And
then Tanisha Ford was on the panel, who has a great book called Dressed in Dreams. That's kind of like her memoir through different, it's a lot about music, but it's kind of organized in terms of different fashion moments. So like each chapter is organized around like leather jacket, knee-high boots, like all these. So she tells stories of her life through these moments in fashion, or sometimes it's like a hairstyle or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was the three of us talking about Beyonce, and Kim Katrine was the moderator. It was really fun. They told us that Canadian audiences are so often quiet and very polite. You know, everyone's more polite. It was kind of a shock coming back to America, or it was a shock to have people be so polite to you. And like, we were talking earlier before we're recording, you know, when someone says, excuse me, you're like, what? Oh, thank you. You said, excuse me. People in Canada are very polite. And the audience was like, we got them talking and reacting. And afterwards, the organizers were like, wow, Canadian audiences don't usually emote like that. So we know we had a really good event because you had them gasping and laughing and all that stuff. So it was fun.
Oh, okay. Good to know. That makes me really, really, really happy. And the good old Cyrus Pookin, goodbye. There is another podcast. Shout out to Jade and XD. They, whenever, because, so both of them live in Brooklyn, and so whenever the sirens go off, they do Bookin, Woodbine. So they probably don't listen to my show. Maybe Jade does. Jade probably listens because me and Jade follow each other, and she's really, really funny and cool. But ultimately, that anytime I hear a siren now, I always do the Bookin, Woodbine thing. And do you know who Bookin Woodbine is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. He's from The Wire. So for those of you who don't know, but he's from The Wire. But anyway, that makes me really, really happy. And it makes me very, I would say, for me to be able to know that someone got together. And, you know, you anytime people get together in a community to discuss Beyonce, the angels sink. So I just,
I even got to throw in a Lilith Fair reference and make fun of Sarah McLachlan a little bit while in Canada, her homeland.
Eyes of the angel.
That gave me a lot of pleasure, and everyone laughed, so I don't think I offended anyone there, so that was fun.
Okay, yeah. Oh, that is amazing. I'm glad that you didn't get anybody to like throw an apple or something at you, because that's not Canadian-like, eh?
No, I don't think they would have.
I love the little A that they do at the end of everything. So yeah, but cool. So kind of the same. The last few weeks have been somewhat of a I wouldn't say downer, but I've just been really trying to get out of my head and actually do stuff. I haven't had any like events. I haven't gone and spoke anywhere. I've been doing a lot of my own kind of building, meaning like trying to like make goals and things happen, you know, that I've said, okay, in 2019, I'm going to do this, or 2019, I said I was going to do that. A lot of it has been, honestly, I've just been very vocal about writing a script. I am in a process of writing a pilot. It's not anywhere, it's not on anybody's table. However, I have a lot of people who are kind of rooting for me in the background, and they're saying like, we know you can do it, we want to see it, we love to see it. So, you know, because I think what's happening right now, and this is something that I'm learning, is that, you know, there have been a lot of conversations that have been had about the lack of diversity in like writer's room, or the lack of diversity that's in entertainment. And the problem is, you know, there are so many different caveats, and there are so many different hoops that people have to jump through in order just to get in the door enough to talk about it. And so I've been fortunate enough that I've made enough relationships, or I've had enough friendships, or I've, you know, again, even being in Lena Waif's Hillman's writing program, that I've had people basically give me the little things that I need to be able to say, okay, do this, or write about this, or write about that, and I guarantee you it'll grant you success. Because ultimately, yes, the industry is thirsty for it, but at the same time, like, people are, you know, specifically Black people are saying, well, how do I get through the door? Because it seems like every single door is closed. So that's kind of been my focus. I'm sorry if a lot of my, you know, content, or even, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've been talking about is like writing, or it's about that. But yeah, it's been pretty cool. I can't say where just yet, but I can say that my column was picked up. So that makes me very happy. And so now your girl has a column. I've been working on an article for that, because that article is due next week. And other than that, just trying to keep this money up so that way these lights can stay on and I can have something to eat. Because again, that Michael Arsenault point about not wanting to die poor is real, but also I don't want to die homeless. And that's also, and that's no homeless stigma. I'm just saying, like, we don't talk enough about the you know, I have freelancers, or I have friends who I know are freelancers, and I'm seeing them like every other month putting up a GoFundMe, or they're asking people like, hey, can you ask someone to donate to my Venmo, because I have not gotten paid from this, you know, outlet, et cetera, et cetera. So it's tough. And I think that's why I'm so tired, is because I'm doing so many things to try to just kind of keep the wheels moving and keep things afloat. So I feel like I'm rambling too. So with that being said, again, thank you all so much for listening. And we are going to go ahead and jump into the topics. So this week, we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about something that people have been, I've both seen online, and also people have been pinging me and asking me to talk about. So Kevin, do you want to talk to us a little bit about, you know, where your thought for today's topic for the episode came from?
In terms of the anxiety?
Yeah.
In terms of, I'm like, what, how do I phrase it? What do I say? Well, it kind of like, you know, you've said that people have been asking you a lot about this. I've been just thinking a lot about this, this and how I'm managing or not managing, as the case may be.
Yeah.
I think managing is an overstatement a lot of times, or a disingenuous statement a lot of times. I just read, well, so we, you know, there's been conversations around this, and I don't want to have it be about her in particular, but Summer Walker and has been, people have been coming down on her for expressing social anxiety in response to some criticisms of her performances, that you know, live, that have gone out on the internet. And I also, I guess it was just this week, finished a book called Bassie Igby's I'm Telling the Truth But I'm Lying.
Yeah.
Have you read it?
No, I'm familiar with it, but I've not read it.
It is, so it threw me for a loop in good ways and bad ways, I guess, because there was, it's really raw, and if you deal with anything around anxiety, or, you know, she's diagnosed with like bipolar 2 disorder as well. So if you deal with any of those, it's a really hard thing to read. Or I found it very hard because I found myself kind of spiraling in a bunch of different ways, because I'd never really read. I mean, we obviously come from extremely different backgrounds. She's born in Nigeria. She's a Black woman. She's a mother. Like, I'm a white guy from Utah, but it was just strange how I'd never heard someone put mental health issues, and especially around anxiety, in the ways that she was writing about it. And so I felt them so deeply. I was like, oh shit, I have to put this book down, because like it's making me. And meanwhile, I was also this week finally trying to just like free write a bunch of stuff in terms of my next project that's all about me. So it was like putting me back in these places I didn't really want to think about and relive. And so both of those things were happening simultaneously, but her book was also inspiring me to write about some of it. So it was this weird hurricane of mess, I guess, of mental health mess that I found myself in and thinking about. And so I really highly recommend that book. Just be prepared that it's a lot. But thinking about how we manage or don't manage anxiety in today's world, as things get much worse and anxiety is much more common, right? I mean, and there's different levels. There's just like a general anxiety, and then there's like diagnoses, and then there's even other levels of it. And it feels like everyone now at least has some kind of level of experience with this. And so just thinking about that, I know people ask you how you manage yours. I don't get asked that much, maybe because I don't manage it very well.
Oh, God.
So we were just thinking about all these things together. And when you brought that up, it made me think of the responses to Summer Walker online, and what people are saying. And, you know, there's some truth in both sides of it, but also there's some meanness going on. And like, how do we change the conversation to be about, like, how do we have a real conversation about it, I guess, rather than just yelling at each other about it?
Yeah. So that, I think that that's ultimately where this conversation does come from, is really, you know, kind of looking at folks like Summer Walker or even SZA. I think another great example is somebody who said, I have to take a step back from the industry. And there have been a lot of artists who've over time have said, you know, anxiety is something that plagues me. And it makes it hard for me to perform. And I think about this a lot. And I think this is why I get asked about my anxiety a lot, or how to manage it, is because, you know, people still see me as being productive through the moment where I'm also extremely dealing with a lot of extreme anxiety. And that's when I was talking about like the latter half of 2019 being hard. I'll be very transparent. There was a moment where I was just kind of like, okay, either I'm going to close all of this up because this is causing me way more greater. Yeah, it's too much. Like, it's just, it's not benefiting me. And it makes me feel like everything I'm doing is causing more angst than joy. And there was another part of me that, you know, again, also being transparent. And I think that's also a big part of it is not saying anything about you, Kevin. But I think I'm way more transparent, open and vocal about what I'm going through. And my therapist, you know, I was telling my therapist that, you know, I feel like there's part of the world that loves that about me, that, you know, has been drawn into my following because they go, Dr. Higgins is telling us the truth about what he's going through. And a lot of us are also going through it and we love to hear it. And there's also a part of the world that says we don't fuck with Dr. Higgins because he's always complaining about what he's going through. And I'm going, I'm just trying to live my life and I'm just trying to give like a very real understanding of what it is to be me in this world. And so, you know, in moments when I speak out and I say, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm suicidal or that I was, but when I make statements like I can understand why someone would want to, you know, commit suicide, because it's what it really all comes down to is this idea of like the pressures that the world puts on you. And so when you look at those pressures and you look at all of the things that the world is expecting you to do, the world is expecting you to perform even through all of the pressures that it continues to put on you. And so when you have someone like Summer Walker who steps up to the mic and says, I don't want none of this shit. Like, I just want to be able to perform. I want to be able to make a couple of dollars off of an album. I didn't ask to go on tour. I didn't ask to do any of this. You're getting people that are saying, but we still need you to perform through all of the anxiety and the emotions that you have. And so it starts to make you feel like you're a means to an end. Like people only, and even for me at times, I felt this way too. Like as long as I'm putting out tweets that are viral, or as long as I can write about my pain, or as long as I can get up in front of a classroom or in front of a big room of people and, you know, and talk about what my experience has been so people can go, and, you know, they can touch my pain but not really have to feel it, then that's when everyone cares. But the moment that I say I'm tired, or I don't want to do this, or I want someone to help me be able to not have to deal with this anxiety, it's fucking crickets, you know? So I think about that a lot. Like, I think about this idea of like, how are we performing and how are people in this world expecting us to perform, and how daunting it can be to perform in the moments when you are in a very, very dark place, you know? So,
Yeah. And I don't know, I'm thinking about it in terms of artists and creative people, and it almost goes hand in hand. It feels like there has to be this, well, even like not, I mean, and teaching to me is performing. I always said, you know, like you're in front of anything where you're in front of people and you have to like be on or whatever you want to call it. And it feels like there has to be a certain level of anxiety involved. Like, I don't know, there's this weird combination of feeling like you have something to say or a talent to give, which is like about ego, but there can be a healthy amount, and then there's also anxiety. Like, I don't know any artist that doesn't have a little bit of anxiety going into it, any creative person, or it wouldn't work, I don't think. But it's like a balance. And when she says, you know, I guess what the conversation is about is like, you're not performing what we want you to be perform. You're not performing in the way we want you to perform. And so what is, like, I don't even know how to phrase it anymore. What is the, what is the performance about, I guess? I'm trying to figure out the conversation, because if you're not performing, if no one's connecting to your music, okay, you might connect to it on an album. People want to see an artist live. If you go see an artist and are just like really turned off by a performance, or really don't connect to it, or the artist can't connect with the audience, you probably are a little less likely to continue supporting the artist. If you're an artist that doesn't want to tour, it feels like you have to be of a certain level to not tour. Like, I don't know, people talk about paying your dues in any industry. And some of that is tied in with racism and sexism and all this other bullshit. But there is also truth to, like, you do have to build a career. You can't just have the career begin at mid-level. And so I do sympathize with people being like, okay, we understand you have anxiety, but we also, like, don't connect to the performance. Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't, you can't have this career that you want. And some people do get it, and that's unfair. And there's the element of her being a black woman and getting it harder, being attacked harder, because I'm trying to think of white artists that also have this kind of thing. And with a white artist, it's more... The only person that comes to my mind is Cat Power. Do you know? So we'll go back to my white lady music days, where I listened to a lot of white ladies. I mean, she's like indie alternative, and... I think there were also some like addiction issues, but that's also a way that a lot of people deal with anxiety. She was like notorious for a certain point of in her career for, you know, going on stage and she might just walk out and leave because she didn't want to finish the song, and you would lose, you know, you would be done with the concert, or she would go on this long rant, and like you never knew what you were expecting, and it came out of like her anxiety, her not liking to be on stage, and probably some addiction things as well, drinking, I believe. She had issues with drinking. But now that I think about it, of course, this is pre-internet or pre-2019 social media. She's still around, she's still playing, but I think she's gotten things under control more. But as I'm remembering it, like, I saw her live once, and it was all about will she, won't she, what will she do? And you liked her music. You knew what you were getting into in a show. And so it was kind of even part of the draw. And that's not the case with this. It's like she's being denigrated for having the anxiety. And I'm sure that there's race issues going on. And the fact that she's a black woman and a white artist might get treated very differently. But at the same time, I can sympathize with people wanting a certain performance, but then it's like, what is the performance about? Who gets to demand what kind of performance someone does? And what drives that is like money, because we want this performance or we won't buy your next album. Okay, so it's about money. And then you can't, the record company won't put out another album if you're not making money touring. So it's still, again, about money. And images and what people expect of anyone. So that to me is where the interesting part of the conversation is, or what we need to talk about. I mean, is it even feasible to say like she should get to do whatever she wants and have the career she wants? Like, in a perfect world, yes. But
yeah.
But we still have to deal with the reality of how things are now. And so I guess that's the truth about any conversation, is we want to be idealistic about things, but it's not feasible with the world we have. So how do you like incrementally do the best for her, for anyone who's dealing with anxiety, not demand that they perform in these certain ways, but they also still have to make money. So
Right. Like,
you know,
no, and that's real. That is so real. And I think that you bring up a really good point too, of like, how do we, or who gets to control the narrative in relation to, you know, the ways that they feel. So like, I think about oftentimes, you know, I've seen, or at least I've heard conversations around, you know, marginalized people basically saying like, I don't get an opportunity to say that I'm tired. I don't get an opportunity to say that I'm annoyed. I don't get an opportunity to feel like I have the space to even be bothered. And I wonder that sometimes around even to like Summer Walker, right? We have seen other artists, you know, play this whole game of like, will they show up? Will they not show up? And people kind of like laugh it off. But it's like then when certain artists are like, I genuinely deal with, you know, I think that that's been the thing when I, as I'm listening and I'm watching Summer Walker, that that's been the thing that I am genuinely like, you know, how much agency or how much space do we get to choose, or how do you know, how much space do we get to actually, how much say do our buy-in do we get when an artist says, I love doing what I do, but the other parts of what you're asking me to do cause me general anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wonder that, like, I thought about this recently. You know, I had made, I wouldn't say made, but part of my curriculum in one of my classes was for my students to have a, basically they had to jump in front of class and they had to give a presentation. And I saw one student go through multitudes of different emotions, and I had to work with them and talk with them through this emotion of public speaking. And, you know, part of me was like, let me just go ahead, like being generally like the anxiety that comes with it, like a part of my job is to make sure that the student performs, but also at the same time, a part of my job is to also be there for the student who's going through this emotional thing and being understanding. And so it just, sometimes I'm wondering, like, are we truly being understanding to people who are saying like, I am human and y'all are expecting me to do this one thing that genuinely creates all of this anxiety in my body, and then we're just going, hey girl, that's a part of the, you know, that's the part of the game. But then also part of the game, part of the question is like, how much of part of the game, and I put quotations around this, y'all can't see me doing it, but I'm doing quotations, how much is part of the game problematic in that sense of like, we're harming somebody? And that's what, right, I wonder. Like, I'm wondering, like, are we genuinely creating more harm? Are we doing more harm to Summer than good because we're expecting her to quote unquote perform in a certain type of way? So.
Right. And okay, so one aspect of, in terms of art and like producing, creating music or, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm, I wonder if we think about it as more of a, art isn't like something you make, it's more like a relationship. You, there's no art without people listening, mm-hmm, to it or watching, mm-hmm, it. So in some sense, it's not only about the one person creating, it's about, yeah, it's about the relationship between the two. But you also said something that's, I think about a lot with teaching and, you know, requiring everyone to stand up and do a presentation at some point or, mm-hmm, contribute to class in some, in some way. And, mm-hmm, a lot of people, you know, say, okay, well, not everyone has the same comfort level, which is true. Totally true. And I often think that part of my job is to then make it so that everyone can be comfortable in terms of doing it, like create an atmosphere where it can be possible for everyone to do it, because it's also not feasible to that someone goes through life without ever having to publicly speak. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so it is a skill that is necessary. And I know there are different levels of comfort with it, but yeah, do we give up trying to instill that skill in people, or, you know, or do we change the way, right? It's for a while, because I've been teaching a long time now, you know, when I first started, it was like pretty custom to be like, no laptops in class, right? Yeah. They're a distraction, because now the internet's connected to everywhere. No laptops in class, because I can tell you're mostly on Facebook, like you're not paying attention, you're on Facebook, right, whatever, mm-hmm, right? And that was pretty well standard. That was pretty much a standard thing for a syllabus. But then as time goes on, it's like, you know what? Some people might be taking notes on the laptop. Some people might mm-hmm, be more comfortable. Like, you know, they have anxiety issues that make them more, you can focus more if you're doing something on the computer than da 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 da. And I understand, right, all of those things and how we need to make space for all of those things. But at the same time, what about those kids that are still just on Facebook the whole time? Right.
Right.
Where's the middle ground where it's, and that's what you were saying about, are we causing more harm than good when we do these things? And what about teaching? Because it's become very much, you know, the way I teach, if you miss all, if you don't come to class, you'll have some readings that you've done, but if you don't come to class, you've missed the main conversation. And now there's people that say, you know, you can't have these attendance policies because you never know what a student is going through, which is true. But at the same time, like, I can't feasibly give you an A for doing all the reading when you never come to class to get the bulk of the information that the class contributes. So where's the line between really addressing these concerns and merely, you know, shuffling people through additional classes without giving them any skill or giving them any, I don't know, I think about that a lot. And this isn't really about anxiety necessarily, but as more and more students have anxiety issues, you know, like, there are things like, I can't, a test makes me too anxious. I can't take the midterm because I'm too anxious. Okay, I want to be sympathetic to the issues you're going through because I myself have anxiety, but I don't know, maybe there's also a generational thing where it's like, well, I had to just do it, so you do too, you know? Like, am I the old man now shaking my finger at people and being like, well, I had to walk two flights or two uphill both ways to school, like whatever our parents used to say, in the snow, uphill both ways, and I did it, so you have to do it too. Because I'm glad that I was pushed in certain ways and had to get those skills. Otherwise, I wouldn't have them today. But where's the line? I don't know. What? how do we both be conscious of people's mental health and issues, but also stand strong in certain places where the skill needs to be instilled? Like, you still have to do certain things. And then I feel that way in terms of this. Like, I'm sympathetic to an artist that has social anxiety and doesn't want to tour, but like, is it feasible today to have that career then if you can't cultivate the relationships with fans? 'Cause for me, I love an album, but it's really about the kind of relationship between the artist and the fan that makes me more of a fan, I guess. And so if I don't feel that, or if I feel like the artist doesn't really care, which anxiety and these kind of issues can often be read as they don't care, which doesn't make that true about it. But if I don't feel like they want to put in the effort to at least
see, why are they there?
Like, they're having a good time. Then why are they there, and why am I listening, and why am I there? So, I mean, that sounds kind of mean, but you know, it's still, I think a lot of people are going to think that about an artist. And so it's almost this impossible thing to have a conversation about, because both sides are valid, really, but
yeah, what is the, and that is the question. I mean, like, do we, and that's why I think I keep going back to this point of asking the question, like, do we have agency over, you know, do we have agency over how people show up in all of the things that make them human? And I think that's the thing I'm learning, and I really want folks to take away from this conversation is, you know, this isn't a space for me to judge really anybody's opinion about everything that's happening around anxiety, right? Like, anxiety takes on different forms, it takes on different, it manifests different. There are days that I'm really good, and then there are days that I'm not. And I love that somebody had said this, and I don't know where I heard or I saw it, but someone had said something to the idea of, like, everything is good until it's not, right? Like, until I'm not good. And I think that that might have been the mindset of what Summer went into this thinking of, like, okay, finally I've made it, I've got a career that I really truly love, you know, I'm doing it, I've made my dream. And then she gets into this arena and now they're telling her, okay girl, you need to do this, and she's going, okay, now this is too much for me, like, I didn't ask for all of this. And people are going, well, you signed a contract, girl, you gotta do what you gotta do. And she's going, but this is not how it was sold to me, or this is what I didn't know it was gonna feel this way. And so I think my biggest thing has become, like, the older that I get and the more I become more self-aware of myself and what I'm going through or what I'm experiencing, I tell myself each day that I'm allowing myself more agency and people. I'm allowing other people too. I'm trying to give them space to feel without me having to feel like that I have to be like, I have to push them to do something the way I would want them to do it, or that, you know, and asking them, are you comfortable with this? Right. And I think about that a lot too, like even in my own classroom and in different scenarios, right. Even when I'm doing like, talkbacks or teach-ins, you know, giving people options, right? And so one of my students, specifically the student who I knew was dealing with a lot of anxiety around his presentation, I asked him, I said, what would make you feel comfortable in this moment? And he basically said, if I can go last. He was like, I just want to go last. I want to be able to build myself up to be able to do it. And I said, okay, that's fine. I said, I just need to know what you need me to do for you so that way you can feel comfortable in this moment. Because yes, the curriculum is telling me that you have to do a presentation, you know, to build your speaking skills. So I can't change that because I don't create the curriculum. However, I want to do whatever I can in this moment to give you agency to be able to do what you need to do to support yourself. And so I think when we start moving and we start navigating conversations that way of like when we are genuinely, instead of us saying, girl, you already knew what you signed up for, you got to do it, and being able to step back and just be like, okay, let me allow you a moment to feel it. Let me allow you a moment to be able to, you know, kind of come to terms or feel better about things the way you need to, and then we'll address it. That for me makes me feel like that's how we effectively help people who deal with severe anxiety or move about the world dealing with severe anxiety.
Popped into my head. I'm like saying, I'm trying to think of like a white artist that this applies to. You know, Amy Winehouse. This happened to her constantly, and it ruined her. There was other issues, like she had some really shitty parents and friends and people that were taking advantage of her. But at the same time, all she ever wanted to do was like sing. And sing a certain kind of music. She loved the old jazz singers. And, you know, once she got thrown into this kind of industry and fame machine, she went downhill really fast. And, like, she had issues with addictions and drinking as a way to kind of cope and get on stage. Mm-hmm. And so, and look what it did to her, you know. It ruined her. And she's one of the, like, thinking about her career, maybe it's just because it's closer to time as, like, as I'm growing up, but what celebrity deaths that, like, just wreck me the most, hers is one of them. Because it's just so sad. And even, I mean, this isn't really about anxiety, but we were also planning to talk about, maybe address the, or talk about the Whitney Houston book that's coming out. Images and fame and what ruined Whitney Houston also, who is the other celebrity death that really kind of wrecks me, how fame ruined her, and how, like, her, I don't know that she had any anxiety or anything, but she had some issues that she had to keep hidden, and she, and Clive Davis really, plotted out a career for her that was not authentic to who she was, just in terms of, you know, making her like America's sweetheart pop singer kind of thing, and that wasn't where she wanted to go, and all of that kind of whatever drug issues she had, it kind of exacerbated everything. So to also know that you don't even have to have any anxiety issues with an industry like that to be kind of ruined by it, what kind of extra toll does that take on a person? So your kind of question about age, or your point about agency and to step in, that's an interesting way to intervene, I think, because you say, what will make you most comfortable at this point right now? We get it. You have anxiety. And I don't want to make this sound like any of what we're saying is a critique or judgment of Summer Walker. She's just like an example right now that is in the media. So like going to her and like, okay, look, this is how you make money. This is what you have to do. What will make you the most comfortable in this situation right now? Maybe it's like, well, I want to be an opener at shows where I only have to do 20 minutes instead of a full show, or I want to cut the tour schedule by half, or, you know, we have to think of different ways that, one, we can grant agency in that, because even then it just feels like you have more control over the situation, right, and you can eat more easily tackle yeah. it. And we also just as a society have to be better about dealing and treating and addressing all of these issues, which isn't necessarily to say that we need more or different drugs that, you know, because I don't know if the pharmaceutical stuff...
That's a whole conversation while, in itself, girl.
Right. While helpful, might have lasting effects, just like turning to alcohol mm-hmm. or whatever. Not to also say that it's bad, because I'm on medications. Yeah. I also feel like I drink sometimes when I'm anxious that, you know, whatever. That's another memoir or part of a story that
write the book, girl, later. Write the book.
Right. And I don't know, I guess what we started out talking about was how do we manage this? And I said, you know, sometimes I don't manage it, right? I ask myself in that day, what's going to help you right now? What's going to make you feel like you have the most mm-hmm. control right now? You know, sometimes the little pill, the little Lexapro or Paxil mm-hmm. or whatever it is, doesn't make you feel that much in control. Not taking it might be worse. But you know, sometimes you need something extra. I'm like, what's going to make me feel best right now? And maybe that night, if things feel really terrible, it's like, I'm going to have a glass of whiskey. Mm-hmm. If I find myself having 4 glasses of whiskey every night, then it's
a problem.
It's another issue to mm-hmm. deal with and think about. But if in that moment, or like sometimes it's just like, I'm going to order a pizza and eat it tonight because that's going to make me feel good.
Yeah.
But again, if you're doing that every night to cope, then it becomes a problem. So right. just ask yourself when you can, like what will help me in this moment? And another thing that I took from that Bassi Ikpe book is she shares it's advice that's given to her from someone else, but she's like, just give it until the morning, right? I always find my anxiety gets much, much worse at night. People have different cycles, but it's kind of a common thing that, you know, I take my pill in the morning, but by, you know, something just feels terrible and I can't get it out of my head at mm-hmm. night. But it's like, if you can get to the morning, it's going to feel different. It might still right. be a problem, but it might not be as crushing of a problem, or you mm-hmm. might be able to think of a solution that or a way that you feel more in control and have agency. So if you get to the morning, just use that. You might still feel terrible, and then that's mm-hmm. another question, another thing to deal with. But it's simple, and it does help if mm-hmm. you can just get to the next morning. Mm-hmm. Take it in small bits. I don't even like trying to give advice on that, because I don't think I have good advice about managing anxiety.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's just like, you know what? I just had to do it, and it fucking sucked, but I had to do it. And I'm glad now that I did, but it was awful. And so that mm-hmm. doesn't feel like advice. But sometimes it's that too. Sometimes yeah. it's just, you know what? This is gonna fucking suck, and you have to do it.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if and I wouldn't say necessarily to wrap it up, but to kind of put a bow on everything that yeah. I said today, I think the one piece of advice that I'd give anybody who is, you know, like you said, you may not have great advice. I don't think my advice is great either, because, you know, as many have saw, many people know, you know, I'm just recently starting to come out of that dark spot that mm-hmm. I was in. And I feel like I'm in that dark spot every year. Last year, it was a little less dark than it was this year. Probably because I put a lot of pressure on myself to feel like I should be further this year. And mm-hmm. I think that's the number one thing that I think my therapist has been helping me to understand and helping me to walk through is, you know, recognizing that in all, right, like even in all of the things that we think we're prepping ourselves for, right, you go to school, you know, if you don't go to school, then you take on a job, and then you say, I'm gonna do my job to my best of my ability, I'm gonna learn everything, I'm gonna do all of this stuff. You know, if you're in class or you're in a program, you're saying, I'm gonna learn everything, and I'm gonna try to, you know, perform in this way of being like the best student possible. And I always kind of go back, you know, my therapist helped me go back to this place, but I think I actually, you know, before I'd even started therapy, had went back to this place. I said, you know, from a very young age, we've been judged, and the whole world has, it's really a business. There's been this whole big business created off of judging you and making you feel like less. You know, when you were in elementary school, right? If you got a bad grade, they'd send you a report card home with your parents, and it was, you know, so-and-so was not doing well in class, right? That's them judging you, them judging, saying like, we're judging the way you learn, or we're judging. And so this whole kind of, from the time that we kind of start moving into the world, you have a 33-year-old, 34-year-old telling a 3-year-old or 4-year-old that they're not performing at their best, or they're not performing at the level of the expectations of the world. And it follows you. And I don't know anybody in this world, even the people who you think are doing it so well. I always go back to Beyonce, but I even think about like Robin Williams is a great example of somebody who, you know, everyone thought in the world was doing life so well. And, you know, and then, you know, trigger warning, you know, he commits suicide. Right. And so, and everyone's wondering what's wrong. And it's going, he had mental health issues. We have to understand that we are human. And I think that's the thing that I really want us to kind of get from this conversation, that, you know, outside of Summer Walker, outside of SZA, outside of Robin Williams, outside of all of these people that we look up to in this industry, we have to recognize that everybody is human, and we are literally doing the best that we can to survive. And I think that when we start adding the pressures of, one, social media, because social media is always, I find, the culprit of a lot of the anxiety that I have, right? I'm seeing people close deals, or I'm seeing people on shows, or I'm being told you're not good enough because, you know, this email came through, and while your friend got this opportunity, you didn't, right? And so your friend's messaging you, hey girl, did you get invited to this? And I'm like, nope, I didn't get invited to that. And now there's this anxiety of like, I'm not good enough, right? And so I think stopping in some moments and just going, what I'm doing right now is the best that I can do. And I've had to say that to myself over and over and over again these last couple of weeks to survive, really, honestly, right? You're teaching, that's the best you can do right now. You've been applying for jobs left and right, and you haven't found one. Teach until you can't teach anymore, girl, because that's what's keeping your lights on, and you got to do that to your best of your ability. You're writing a script. No, you don't. You may not have closed a deal, but how many other people are writing, right? You're doing the best that you can. You know, I have to remind myself every time I go to do something, or every time I move in a certain realm of things, I have to just stop and just go, girl, like, you're doing enough, and that is okay. And I think if you feel like there are people in your world who are adding to that pressure, if you feel like there are people in your world who you feel like are taking away from your creativity or your ability to feel like you're enough, then there needs to be real conversations about how you close those holes, or you close those loops, and be able to really focus and zone in on what you need. But I think that's genuinely my advice, you know, when dealing with your anxiety, is, one, if you can afford it, find a therapist. If you can't, right, you know, there are a whole bunch of Google resources about, you know, that can help people through understanding and comprehending what their anxiety looks like. And I've even used some of them even with a therapist. And then there are also, you know, services that help people on a sliding scale. I have not gotten meds yet, but I do have an appointment in the coming weeks to get meds. And I think, and there shouldn't be any stigma and any shame in that too. So, you know, I think just really, you know, destigmatizing this idea that, you know, that you're doing it all alone, or that you should feel alone in whatever you're doing. You're not. There are a lot of people out here that are doing the best that they can. And honestly, again, that is enough, and I can't say it enough. So, yeah, that's my advice for anybody who might be struggling with feeling like they're not doing or working or moving to the best of their ability. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, with that, we're going to go ahead and move to the music section, and we're going to talk a little bit about music, if you may. Okay. So recently I've been dropping kind of these tidbits of like, how old songs are, how old albums are, and I want to continue to do that. You know, this week, Destiny's Child's first album turned 20 years old. Yeah.
Not
the first 20, album.
It would be 21, wouldn't it? Because the first one was 98.
So then probably it is 21. It's either, I knew it was 20
unless
or 21.
It's right, unless
I
saw it's Writings online. Of the Wall, that on the wall. That
it's Writing on the Wall.
Okay, so that's the second. So that would turn 20. So yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So
look at me with my.
Either way, we're old. Yeah, you better know your Beyonce facts, girl. Look at you. A stan, honey. A stan. Yes, but ultimately, somebody somewhere, one of them albums is between 20 and 21 years old, child, and we're old as fuck.
Yeah.
That's basically what they're trying to remind us is every time someone says, you know, this album kind of debuted 20 years ago. I'm like, yeah, thanks for reminding me that, yeah, I was a baby. I was a baby when that album came out. So question of the day, what is your favorite song off of what is your favorite song off of Writings on the Wall?
Oh, man. I just like all Beyonce songs. I find it hard to, let's see. I mean, I would go with, it's like cliche, but I would still go with Say My Name.
Okay.
Probably.
Oh, and rest in peace to, what is his name? LaShawn. I think it was LaShawn Daniels who passed away. He passed away right in the middle of recording. So rest in peace to LaShawn Daniels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say Say My Name.
Yeah, Say My Name. Okay.
I mean, all the singles from that album were so good. Bills, Bills, Bills.
Yeah.
Bugaboo, Jumpin' Jump. Oh, Jumpin' Jumpin's good.
I got that. You know what? I used to love that song, but then I felt like the radio played it out. And it was just like, every time I would hear it, I would turn it. Because it was just like, oh, that song was everywhere.
Yeah, Say My Name. I'm confident. Say My Name, final answer. Especially when you consider the remix with the, like, gospel infused. Like, she redid at Coachella. Whose remix was that? Was that, I'm blanking now on my trivia. Say My Name. Timbaland remix. They did those like gospel-y runs and the same, you know.
Say my name. Michelle. Say my name, boy. Say my name. Yes. I too am here for the gospel runs. I would say, I think that my favorite, I recently just started listening to that album again. I haven't listened to that album in years. But I will always say that I think Bills hits a certain way. I don't know why. I think it was just because I think Timbaland, that was when Timbaland was really coming into his sound as a producer. And I just really love, it was a very signature sound, but at the same time, it just, it reminds me of the time we were living in. Cause he was literally everywhere. Timbaland and Missy were on everybody's song. So it just reminded me a lot of that. But I will say that I think Stay was another one of my favorites. I think it was called Stay, where Beyonce basically screams the entire song. and then I also think another one too was, another Timbaland produced, track, the Hey Ladies one. That one is also one of my favorite ones because again, it was a very signature Missy Timbaland sound. And I think it just was really, really fun. Although I will say this, and I'm probably going to get some shit for it. I still laugh I feel like a lot of Beyonce's writing was so laughable at that time. It was just very, you could tell she was 16.
Yeah.
You know, you could tell she was a kid. And they had her singing about, like, his man is cheating on me. And I'm like, girl, you're 12. it felt silly. So now that I listen back to it as an adult, I laugh a lot when I listen to her lyrics. But it's just, it was a really fun album. So, love it.
And another reason or evidence of, like, how astronomical the growth in... I mean, she's always been professional, you know, on it, but like the growth in her writing and abilities since those days now to, you know, Lemonade, Homecoming, it's pretty remarkable to see.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, ultimately, like, she's always been, like I said, she's always been that girl in terms of like her creativity. But I think another piece of it too was like having the freedom to be able to be more creative. And I think that that's what's kind of catapulted her, where I feel like when she was under her dad and when she was under Sony and they were, you know, in Columbia and all these other, you know, people were on her, there was like this feeling. And I feel like a lot of artists deal with this too, feeling like I can't be my real authentic self. I can't create the way I want to create because the world's telling me how I have to create. Versus now, when you do look at Four and you do look at, you know, Beyonce and you do look at Lemonade and you look at the Lion King album, like all of these different albums that she has had in the last, maybe I would say 10 years, have really been this exponential piece of her being able to say, like, I'm in full creative control. And even, like I said, I think with, you know, with even down to like Bootylicious, right? That was one of the first big, big songs that she had for, you know, Destiny's Child and Survivor and all of that, right? Like, it, while it might have sounded childish, you can still hear them trying to pander to a certain demographic of people. Like, they're trying to make music that is inclusive of everybody, whereas now the music she's making is for a certain type of demographic, but it's a demographic she can speak to. So, I don't know. I just love to, I continue to love to see her grow. I feel bad that none of the other girls are as to where she is. Have you, again, well, random question, are you watching The Masked Singer?
No. Since my rant last time of how much it annoys me, I haven't been able to watch any of the episodes. Why? Because Michelle's on it, isn't she?
Michelle is. Yeah, that's what I was going to mention, that she's been on it. She's been doing pretty good. Actually, it's funny because my husband said, he goes, I didn't know Michelle could sing that good. And I'm going, man. Yeah, Michelle has range and people sleep on it.
I still, my favorite song from the like Destiny Fulfilled, was that what it was called when they they did their solos and
no, yeah, 2004,
what's it, what's the song called, but this, my favorite moment of that whole album is a Michelle verse on Through With Love, or is it called,
you're probably Through With Love? Say I knew you were thinking Through With Love. Everyone loves that.
She's, and also her voice is so distinct. Okay, don't get me started on The Masked Singer, because I will go off again. But, like, their guesses are so ridiculous. Has anyone put it that it's her? Or
I think that they're starting to. I think that they... So that was one of the things that happened this past episode, was somebody was like, "If I feel like you're Michelle Williams," okay. And she just was kind of like... And so then she gave a clue that was kind of like off-putting, and people were like, "Oh my God, I don't know." And I keep going, like, we all know. Like, if you're a distinct Destiny's Child fan, just like everyone knew Raven was Raven, because... spoiler alert, if you watch the show, I'm sorry if you haven't been keeping up, but Raven went home last week. So, you know, so... But we all knew she was Raven. There's another cheetah girl that's on the show. I won't say who. But there's just multiple, like, when you... Patti LaBelle is on it. We all know Patti LaBelle is on it. And so
she's... Patti LaBelle was like, on The Masked Singer?
Yes, she is.
She's on it now?
Yes. Patti LaBelle is on it. Patti LaBelle...
What are you doing, Patti?
I don't...
Why? Why does she have time for that?
Patti LaBelle is on The Masked Singer. She's the flower.
Oh, I haven't heard. But, like, again, you can't mistake Patti LaBelle's voice.
You sure can't.
But, girl, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
You do not need to do that. Remember when Patti LaBelle yelled at that lady for thinking that the cupcake
wrap was... She was eating the paper.
Oh, my God. That is still my favorite.
You know I'm not going to eat the paper, boo.
There's so many good... Patti LaBelle, and people were just passing around her singing the ABCs on Sesame Street too. That's such a good one. It's almost Patty Pie time again too, because Thanksgiving.
Yeah, a friend of mine said that she's bringing a Patty Pie to, because we're doing like a Friendsgiving kind of situation. She's like, "I'm gonna bring a Patty Pie," and I'm like, "You can do whatever you want. I'm not gonna promise that we all gonna eat it." However,
those pies are good though.
They're a lot of sugar, honey. Oh, yeah. They are a lot of sugar. Oh, true. And so true. Even for somebody like me who's addicted to sugar, I sometimes will eat it and I'm like, "Woo, this is a lot." So I'm going to give her credit and say, yes, those pies are good, but they taste very processed. So so I'm going to go ahead.
When those first came out, and that video of the person eating the pie, oh, man. I was obsessed with those pies for a minute.
Yeah, he, what's his name? I forget what his name is. Yeah, but he is definitely one of the ones that, he put her on, and I'm glad that she put him on for putting her on. Yeah. So, there's that on that. So with that, we'll stop random tangenting. So now we are going to go ahead and move into the playground. All right. So with that being said, wanting to know, what are your peeves for this week?
Okay. Well, I'll name my peeve as we were going to talk about the Whitney Houston book and then we didn't. So I'll name my peeve as the fact that people are coming after Robin for, tarnishing Whitney's memory when Robin has every right to tell the story. I mean, I find it remarkable that she has not told the story for this so long, because like best friend, whatever, you know, however they define their relationship, like, she has every right to tell about her time with Whitney Houston, and it doesn't feel salacious to me. Like, Robin is out mm-hmm. for I've the book should be arriving. I've pre-ordered it. I can't wait to read it. Mm-hmm. I love Whitney Houston. And, like, everyone's known about this without Robin actually confirming it. But I'm mm-hmm. really interested to hear what this, you know, about the story, because Whitney's mom goes out there talking about how she would have disowned her child after Whitney had mm-hmm. had passed. So why isn't mm-hmm. that tarnishing her memory? Her mom yeah. can say any old homophobic thing, and people didn't come after her for tarnishing her memory. But now when Robin wants to tell this side of the story, everyone's coming after it, and that's bullshit, because it's like this queer antagonism of you mm-hmm. can't, you're ruining her memory. No, why? You're telling her exactly who she was and is, and still, you know, whatever. No one's making any claims about her identity. She's just saying, like, we had this relationship. I was her best friend, closest. Even Bobby Brown has said that, like, if she had stayed with Robin, things had probably had gone different in their in everyone's right. life. So mm-hmm. anyway, I'm really looking forward to that, and I'm not about entertaining this whole narrative of how it tarnishes Whitney's memory rather than gives us a fuller account of who she was. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, okay. Yeah. No, I think you're 100% right. And I still, to this, I've been saying this, and I'm going to continue to keep saying this. I've been fuck Bobby Brown forever, ever since seeing the Whitney. I was already right. fuck Bobby Brown, but then I saw the Whitney documentary and I was just like, okay, fuck Bobby Brown even more. So, I'm forever fuck Bobby Brown. And I'm definitely thankful that Robin's out telling her story and doing what she needs to do, to get her voice heard. I think my pee for this week. So I had multiple things, and I was like, when I get on my podcast, I'm gonna talk about this. But I think, so you may not have this problem so much, and I don't know if I've said this before, but if I did, it bears repeating. In California, we have a lot of places to park, specifically in certain cities where the parking is free. So, like, I think that that's one of the things that people oftentimes don't know about California is that, like, yes, Los Angeles requires you often to pay to park. Yes, San Francisco requires you to pay to park. But when you start getting into, like, random little cities, like one of the city where I live, you can just pull into, like, a grocery store location. Like, they have these big ass parking yeah. lots, and they just have random places for you to park. And I don't know if that's how it is in New York. I've never been in New York, so I can't speak for New
Not
York.
Really.
However, right. So, however, here we have that. My peeve this week are for people who back in. I don't know.
You have mentioned this before. I okay. share it as well. So
yes. So okay. So let's take it a little bit a step further. When you back in and you see that there are a ton of cars waiting to go past you, when you're like, when you are trying to finesse, especially too when you're in an SUV. So I think that that's what really pissed me off was recently I was in Burbank. I was going to one of my trainings, and there was like a line of cars behind me, and I drive an SUV too. And so that's why whenever I see a spot, I just immediately pull in it and I go, I'm not going to try to back in. I'm not going to try to do all of this stuff because I know that people are trying to get around me to try to find spots.
Yeah.
This man in like a big ass Suburban is literally taking his time to back in. He is straightening out. He's trying to get his doors right. He opens his door, he closes it, pulls out a little bit, and I'm going, sir, like, we're trying to park so we can get where we need to go. And you're over here trying to make sure like your car is perfect in a spot that you knew your car was too big to get in. Why are we here? It bugs me. And I don't know why, but I think it's because I've been driving more these days than I ever have in the last couple of months. It is bugging me. Like, there's so many things that people do. California driving, I guess that's also another peeve of mine. California driving. Have you ever driven here in California?
Yeah.
It is the absolute ghetto. Just everything about driving here in California is trash. The traffic is awful. The parking can oftentimes be terrible. The way people, like one guy flicked me off and I was like, I wasn't even doing anything to him. He just flipped me off or whatever. And I'm like, why are you flipping me off when I'm just driving? I'm just minding my business, trying to get to where I need to go. So I hate it here. I really do. Like, there's so many things about driving in California. And then you see all these people are like, I'm going to go to California and I'm going to live the 11th American dream in California. And I'm like, stop coming here. We don't have any more space. Like, we don't have any more room for you to drive here. So stop coming here, people. Stop. It literally, like, the traffic is so bad here at certain times, it can take you an hour to literally go what would normally take you 10 minutes without traffic.
Yeah.
That is how bad traffic is here. And people don't seem to understand that. And it drives me up the wall. So yeah. Please don't come here.
New York traffic is bad too, but I think each city has their own, and Boston traffic, but each has their own like unique, every big city has its own unique way that their traffic is bad. And like drivers in the different cities wouldn't necessarily transfer to the others, but I've driven in all three and noticed different ways that they're bad. So I feel you. I feel you on that.
It is awful. It is so awful. So yeah, I felt the need to just kind of, it bears repeating. It just bears repeating. So, all right. Well, we have reached the end of our episode. Anything you want to announce, let people know?
No, I think boringly, don't really have much for the end of the year. We'll see what I can get together, but so far nothing. Okay. until early next year. So what about you?
Honestly, same, just really trying to get through the rest of the holidays. I know that Thanksgiving's coming up. I'm not really doing too much traveling. So I'm very fortunate that I get to stay here I get to stay local for these next couple of weeks. But yeah, that's really it. Like I said, I'm just doing a lot of stuff on my end to try to get to where I want to go, trying to set 2020 up to be a year of productivity. I feel like the last 3 years, I've just been doing a lot of like laying foundation. And so I'm praying that 2020 will start to open up, you know, in ways that I've been able to say, okay, finally, I laid the foundation for the last 3 years. Now this year I can actually celebrate it in terms of my work. So where I'm not just working to work, I think that that's my goal. And I think maybe our next episode, it would be probably real cool to talk about that. Like, how do we get out of the working just to work, to say that we're working? Because I feel like we've moved into a place of that as a people. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm doing this. And none of it is really doing anything for anybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my goal for the next couple of weeks, is to do stuff that will actively make me feel like I'm moving forward. Yeah, so.
Cool.
Okay, but all right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. And with that, please continue to take care of yourself. And yeah, we'll catch you in the next episode. See you soon. Bye.
I'm wiser now. I'm not the foolish girl you used to know so long ago. I'm stronger now. Learn from my mistakes which way to go, and I should know. I put myself aside to do it your way.